Okay, so welcome to Biblical Villains Part 2. And this week, we will be discussing Nimrod, King of Bavel. And as you would see on the source sheet, the lecture this morning is subtitled The Dark Tower. In honor of Stephen King, of course. Usually reserved for religious crusades. One would have imagined that only jihad-driven fanatics were capable of blowing up the planet so that they could save the world. Yet, reasonably intelligent people came perilously close to doing just that in our lifetimes, or at least in most of our lifetimes. Others see jihad as precisely the point. They perceive the conflict, they perceive that conflict, Cold War conflict, in candidly religious terms. Atheistic communism warring against the Judeo-Christian West. And the victors rejoiced in the triumph of truth marching on, however close we came the nuclear holocaust. That is the price one gladly pays for truth's triumph. I guess this is actually ripped out of today's headline as well. Yet the injection of religious elements seems facile. Why battle communism? Why not just battle atheism? Certainly, among the primary tenets of communistic belief was providing for the poor and protecting workers from exploitation. And these are hardly a violation of religious traditions. Well, there is, I think, a more primal issue here. Those of us who are old enough to remember were shaken by Nikita Khrushchev's brutish displays of ferocity as he banged his shoe on a UN desk in an eye-popping display of calculated contempt for the aspirations and simple civility of civilization. And I believe he meant it literally when he made his savage prediction of communist victory. We will bury you, he said. What would happen to us if he was right about what he called historical inevitability? Maybe some people related to the threat of communism in terms of its repressiveness, its poverty, its painful prescriptions. It was profoundly inhumane. But to many other people, it had the nightmarish qualities of horror movies. It was inhuman. Years later, many years later, I was able to recognize the roots of this inhumanity in the leader of the post-flood world, the true father of communism and all its related evils, Nimrod, king of Babel, and builder of the Dark Tower. The Talmud in Maseches Avodah Zarah, which on your virtual...
what page?
Sheet is source number one.
Did you go to the office?
I guess I'll just be printing them myself. it's okay. It's a short sheet, actually. It's only one side.
You don't want it?
Yes. And half of it I wasn't going to read anyway. the first selection from the Talmud is very, very well known. We are taught Tonot Ve'Elio. In the yeshiva of Elio HaNovi it was taught. Sheshes Alofim Shona Havei HaOlam. The world is on a 6,000-year plan. Very, very well-known statement. And these 6,000 years are broken down as follows. 2,000 years of Tohu, that creation word, the Ha'oretz Hoysa, Tohu, Vavohu. 2,000 years of void and confusion, when the world is still in a state of formation. And then 2,000 years of Torah, followed by 2,000 years of, that are called Yemos HaMashiach, 2,000 years during which there is the potential for Mashiach to appear. And the Tonet Ve'Elio makes the wistful comment that many of those years have already passed and Mashiach has still not appeared. So we know we are drawing to the end of the 6,000-year period. Well, then the Talmud asks on this statement, Shnei Alofim Torah Me'emas. When do the 2,000 years of Torah begin? This would seem to be an answer with a very obvious question with a very obvious answer. The answer everybody would say is when the Torah was given at Sinai. But the numbers don't work out. Can't be when the Torah was given at Sinai, because, as the Talmud points out, the 2,000 years of Torah don't begin until the year 4,000, or don't end until the year 4,000, but the Torah wasn't given until the year 2,448, which means that from that time till the 4,000th year is only 1,552 years, so we have to find another starting date for the 2,000 years of Torah. They're simply, the mathematics doesn't work out. And therefore, the Gemara answers, Ela mevi'es ha-nefesh asherosu b'chorin. The 2,000 years of Torah begin in the 52nd year of Avraham Avinu's life, the year that corresponds with the period known as ha-nefesh asherosu b'chorin, when Avraham and Sarah were proselytizing and bringing people under the wings of the Shekhinah, of the Divine Presence, spreading the message of Torah in the world. And this is the period when the 2,000 years of Torah begin, but more significantly for our discussion, this is the time when the 2,000 years of Tohu, of formlessness and void, end. This tells us, the implication of this is, is that the creation story extends into the life of Avraham. The story of creation does not end. The world is not fully formed. Tohu has not come to its conclusion until the 52nd year of Avraham Avinu's life. And this therefore implies that the fundamental construct termed human is still primitive until the 52nd year of Avraham Avinu's life. The human is still developing, and the period of development terminates only with the arrival of a template for consummate humanity in the form of a mature Avraham. The word tohu is used here by the Talmud, 2,000 years of tohu. This is a primal key word. It's the very same word used in the opening of the Torah, as I mentioned a moment ago. V'ha'oretz hoysa tohu vavohu, meaning the earth was still unformed. Now, the Mishnah teaches us in Avos, which is source 2, again, a well-known Mishnah, very brief, it says, Asara doros mi Adam v'ad Noach, there were 10 generations from the first man, from Adam until Noach, and then another 10 generations from Noach until Avraham. And this Mishnah, which counts 20 generations, does something that is seemingly unnecessary. Every one of us is quite capable of reading the Chumash and counting from 1 to 10, and again from 10, from 11 to 20. We don't need the Mishnah to tell us that there were 10 generations from Noach to Avraham and another 10 from Adam to Noach and another 10 from... Oh, you have the sheets. Okay. Well, you're almost finished with
Thank you. Thank you.
So this... This seemingly pointless narrative of begats, right? We're all familiar with paragraph after paragraph in the Torah, this one begat that one, and this one begat that one, and then the Mishnah sums up for us, there were 10 generations from Adam to Noach, and another 10 from Noach to Avraham. This extended and seemingly pointless narrative of begats recorded in the Torah points out something very important. Even though it's obvious, as I said a moment ago, we can count on our own. Our sages teach us that they view these extended narratives of begats as descriptions of the intensive program of selection, natural selection, required to inbreed the characteristics that we associate with consummated humanity. A program spanning 20 generations over a period of 2 millennia. In other words, we've seen from the first selection from the Talmud, source number 1, that humanity is not consummated, the period creation is not consummated, until the 52nd year of Avraham Avinu's life. That's the end of Tohu. The Torah's description of this period of Tohu, spanning 20 generations from Adam to Avraham, is a period in which characteristics are being selectively inbred into humanity, which consummates in Avraham, and now creation is complete. Now tohu is over, and we have a fully formed human being. The creation of a human being started on the sixth day of creation, but it was not consummated until Avraham Avinu's 52nd year. Now I want to draw your attention this morning to this second set of 10 generations from Noach to Avraham, because this set of generations is bookended by two epic events. We have at the beginning the great flood during the life of Noach, and at the end the Tower of Babel, the Dark Tower, which coincides with the life of Avraham. I want to consider with you the story of that tower, and a thoroughly mysterious story it is. What did the people of the tower do that was so wicked? The Torah never says that the builders of Babel violated any divine commandment or committed any injustice. Let's read together. Page 48 in the Chumash. Page 49 in the English. Chapter 11. The Tower of Babel and the Dispersion. Oh, the Torah begins by telling us the whole earth. Chapter 11, verse 1. Page 49. The whole earth was of one language and of common purpose. And let's just skip to verse 4 for a moment. And they said, come, let us build us a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed across the whole earth. Now, that certainly does not sound like such a bad idea. Indeed, the Midrash, which you have in Source 3, comments, Maaseh Dor HaMabul Nisparech, the evil of the generation of the flood is articulated by the Torah. We are told specifically what they did. But Maaseh Dor HaFlogo Lo Nisparech, the evil of the generation of the dispersion is perhaps hinted at, but it is certainly not articulated. What did they do wrong? In fact, they achieved what contemporary Western civilization has only been able to dream about. Universal understanding, common language, unity, harmony. They had a United Nations that actually worked. And indeed, the Midrash that I just cited also comments, which is source 4, it says, Dor hamabul al yidei shehoyu shtufim begezel lefichoch lo nishtayer mehem pleita. The Dor hamabul, the generation of the flood, they were up to their necks in extortion and robbery, all kinds of terrible crimes, which made it impossible to live one with the other. Aval Elu, but the generation of the dispersion of the tower, Al Yidei Shehoyu Ohavim Zeze, because they loved one another, Shenemar Vayihi Kol Haaretz Shafa Achas, the entire earth was of one language, Lefichoch Nishtayra Mehem Pleita, therefore there was a great remnant from them. They were not wiped out, they were dispersed. Holomadita, and from this you learn, Godol HaShalom, peace is very important, very great, Usnua HaMachlokas, and divisiveness, argument, this is detestable in the eyes of God, because that is the nature of the Dor HaMabul, of the generation of the flood. Yet, in spite of this observation on the part of the Midrash, God makes it sound as if what they were doing was an unmitigated disaster that spelled the end of everything. Take a look on the same page at verse 6. And Hashem said, behold, they are one people with one language for all. And this they begin to do. And now should it not be withheld from them all they propose to do? I never cease to be amazed, by the way, when I read the Chumash in English, how incomprehensible it sounds. Why bother people bother to translate it? I mean, it's like, wow, who wrote this? I mean, you would first of all, you'd send it back with an F on it. Anyway. So God, in spite of this wonderful United Nations, God thinks it's an unqualified disaster. And what they are proposing to do is unthinkable. So it is ironic then to discover that the primary enterprise of these 10 generations, since these 10 generations from Noach to Avram, their primary enterprise is an irony. On the one hand, here we have the tower in which Nimrod is trying to create unity, common purpose, common understanding. And yet the primary enterprise of the 10 generations, as related in the Torah, seems to represent a premeditated assault on the values of unity and harmony. Let's take a look at a few verses. Let's go back to page 42. And in chapter 9, verse 19, or 43, verse 19 in the English, these three were the sons of Noach, Shem, Ham, and Yafes, and from these the whole world was spread out. Spread out. They were Naftsa in the Hebrew, spread out. And then we read in chapter 10, verse 5, on the next page, page 45, we read of from these, the islands of the nations were separated in their lands, each according to its language, by their families, in their nations. Also, as an aside, an incredibly strange statement. Islands in their lands. Okay.
On what page is that? That I don't find.
45.
Yeah, that was page 45. Yes, verse 5.
Thank you.
Now we read of different nationalities on page 47. We're still in chapter 10, verse 20. These are the descendants of Ham by their families, by their languages, in their lands, in their nations. And we read of the same thing again on page 40, page 49. In verse 31, these are the descendants of Shem, according to their families, by their languages, in their lands, by their nations. And we read of divergence and separation. If we go back to the previous page, to verse 32. Actually, it's not the previous page. It's right here, sorry.
Which
page? I just read 32. 31, 32. These are the families of Noah's descendants, top of page 49, verse 32, according to their generations in their nations, and from these the nations were separated on the earth after the flood. The primary enterprise of these 10 generations between Noach and Avraham is separation, diversity, divergence. And to this, the reaction is Nimrod. So, the essential accomplishment of these 10 generations is that they were not only fruitful and multiplied, but they scattered across the earth. This had been the central commandment of God to the post-flood world, and this diversity was the purpose and the symbolism of the rainbow covenant that he made with its population. Just as Charles Darwin and Alfred Russel Wallace found islands and isolated populations to be unique laboratories, hothouses of nature that demonstrate evolutionary processes in an intensified and dramatic form, so did the islands of the nations we just read of in chapter 10, verse 5. So did these islands develop entirely new societies, languages, and cultures. In his book, The Island of the Colorblind, Oliver Sacks notes that, quote, the sort of divergence which has made Pingelepes a distinct dialect of Polynesia has occurred many times throughout the scattered islands of Micronesia. One cannot but be reminded of how animals and plants diverge from the original stock, first into varieties and then into species, a speciation intensely heightened by the unique conditions on islands. Cultural and linguistic evolution, of course, normally proceeds much faster than Darwinian, for we directly pass whatever we acquire to the next generation. End quote. These 10 generations formed new modes of relating to the world around them, separated in their islands, in their lands, each to his own language and the legacy of the descendants of Noah and the progression and direction of these 10 generations can be summed up in one word: diversity. The philosopher Herbert Spencer said that, quote, civilization is a progress from an indefinite, incoherent homogeneity towards a definite, coherent, heterogeneity. Counterintuitive, but that is the reality. This is described here in this parsha, Parshas Noach. The homogeneous, you would think, is definite and coherent. It's just the opposite. It's indefinite and incoherent. And it is only in heterogeneity that we achieve definition and coherence. It is against this thematic background that we need to see Nimrod and his ideological backlash. Nimrod was diversity's